Hello, and welcome to the Brad Pitt Cast, the podcast about Brad Pitt. My name's Dan.
My name's Joseph.
And we're here to talk about the film California, starring Brad Pitt.
Dan has had the grime song California stuck in his head all day.
I'm not
going to
try to sing it, but I haven't listened to that song in years.
It's not a great song, I don't think.
I think it's kind of poppy and fun.
I think Grimes has completely, in the space of a single press tour, ruined any goodwill that I have towards her as a person.
That's fine.
Dating Elon Musk, bad.
Yeah, that feels terminal.
Yeah, saying the things that she said in the press that's like, hey, did you read this recent quote that was like, capitalism should work, it's corruption that's the problem? Like, capitalism in a perfect system works.
Well, that's true.
No, it's not.
Well, no, okay, no, all right. I mean, imperfect. I mean, if we're going to, no, look, if it were perfect.
If it were perfect,
that's what I mean.
It would be perfect.
It's insane. Yeah. It's not, I'm not saying, look, let's not start this off. We had a Kant argument last week. We don't need
a Marx argument.
That's right, sorry. That would be in the bonus features. We keep all the raw audio of these, mostly.
Yeah, we could dump, like, the lost files of the podcast. just you being like, Joe, we cannot keep talking about this.
Mostly.
So we're talking about the film California, which is...
Go on. I just want to say what's exciting about this episode.
Oh, go on. Please do.
So normally, I think every single other episode, even the test episodes of this podcast, we've watched the films that we've talked about together most of the time just before the podcast. This time, due to it being a tough week for everybody, scheduling constraints, etc., we watched it separately and have not yet at all discussed it.
No.
Which is exciting for
me. Are you excited? I'm excited too.
Yeah.
I think I know what you're going to say about this film.
Yeah, I think I know what you're
going
to
say.
Yeah. Okay. Maybe we should try to do that first. What if I pretend to be Joseph and you pretend to be Dan?
Okay. You give me Joseph's summary of the film and I'll give you Dan's summary of the film.
Okay, I could be total... I mean, this could be humiliating.
It's the joy, right? Go on.
I think this is a 3.5 to 4-star film for Joseph.
Go on.
I think you think that it does an interesting thing in that it shows you an insight... Like, the interesting thing narratively that this film does is it shows you a crime writer being exposed to the things they're writing about and kind of being tortured by them, by having their face shoved in them. It's a playing against type by Brad Pitt, which is very exciting. It has a performance by...
Juliette Lewis,
which is extremely weird and you would find very compelling and kind of gorgeous in its strangeness. It's got a lot it represents the kind of America you like and the kind of grotesquerie you like.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you would have found this thrilling, but at the same time, I mean, it's kind of cheesy, probably a little bit cheesy even for you. David Duchovny's character especially, although there are still interesting things about seeing him on screen. Brad Pitt has a lot of quirks that you probably find endearing. Mm-hmm. That's my take.
That's my Joseph. I'll tell you in a second how correct you are. I'll do that.
Sure.
So, my feeling is, I can say, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
My sense is that you like it less than I do. So my sense is that you would say it's a 2.5 to 3-star film. So that we don't radically differ, but you're just not entirely sold on it the same way. And I think that's because you would think that this film is cruel in ways that you don't like. That it's like slightly too much that you get the point. I think you would hate the Duchovny voiceover and that you would really struggle with that. I think you might even think while I was watching this film, I was like, will Dan break my heart and tell me that he thinks David Duchovny's performance in this film is not good? So we'll see if you think that. And I think the thing that we would agree on, that we share, which is a thing we broadly share, is that you would be of the opinion that this film is 20 to 30 minutes too long.
Yeah, that's broadly correct. Well, it's interesting, right? Because I feel like I'm still... So I watched half this film yesterday and half this film today. At times, I was enjoying the idea of coming on here and saying, this film is cruel and pointless and I wish it didn't exist and I hate it.
You hate it?
Okay. At times I did.
Okay.
Absolutely. And I really swung back and forth on that.
Sure.
At other times, I entirely occupied what you just said, particularly in the last half hour, I think. Which, not that I thought it shouldn't, it was the right length, but I think it did a bunch of things where I was like, okay, you're not that stupid.
Yeah.
But I really came up against some stuff in this film, and I'm still struggling to work my way through
it. I'm surprised that you hate... I know that it's cruel and it like... luxuriates in a lot of grotesquerie in a way that I know is like a big turnoff for you.
Well, I want to hear a bit about you before I kind of really delve in.
Okay,
we should probably tell the listener. It's funny because we both know we've seen it. I think we're less inclined to explain it to other people.
It's, well, I was thinking, what's the logline you give for this film? This film is...
Oh, it has the stupidest fucking premise imaginable. That is totally it's inexplicable. Fine. No.
We're going to disagree about this film. I'm surprised. I thought we'd be the same. Go on, tell me what's
stupid.
Think
something... So this is something that's probably important for us. I mean, I am very suggestible.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like if I'd seen this with you, I would have... And I think part of me wants to play around with not being influenced by someone in the room and just having a different opinion and seeing what happens.
Sure.
Which also suggests a kind of psychopathy when it comes to my opinions, that they are totally dissociated from the self. But that's stuff I can work through in other contexts.
It's the therapy / podcast. Yeah. What do you think stupid about the premise? Tell me the premise and tell me what's stupid.
Okay, so David Duchovny and his partner. David Duchovny is a grad student who wants to write a book about serial killers.
Who's written an article
about
serial killers in the past.
He's a journalist grad student, which is a terrible decision, David Duchovny. And he wants to go on a tour of serial killer sites with his partner.
None of this is stupid so far.
No, but because they can't afford it, they can't afford what? Mm. They pay for their own hotel rooms. They pay for their own food. Gas, I guess. I guess that's a few hundred dollars. Instead of coming up with a few hundred dollars, they post a notice in the university that Brad Pitt goes to for some reason. Mm. I can't remember why.
That bit is extremely rushed.
He asks if someone is there. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Saying, we want people to go on this trip with us, ultimately get to California, go on a tour of serial killer sites on the way to California, and we want to split the cost with someone. The only people who respond are these caricatures of Hicks.
Brad Pitt and Juliette Lewis, who are lovers.
And it feels a little bit like high school student production.
We can have a conversation about that, though.
Yeah, I think there's problematic stuff there.
Sure.
Oh, okay, that's interesting.
I think that's on purpose.
All right,
I'm
willing to be convinced, as always. And the
key thing that you left out is that Pitt is a serial killer.
Duchovny's
writing a book about serial killers and is unwittingly being joined on the road trip with a real life serial killer.
Except that most serial killers have some craft. Well, that's the point, right? Most serial killers, we romanticize them as having craft. Brad Pitt's just a monster.
But the film is definitely
I'm kind of coming to, I think.
And Brad Pitt kills people on the road trip. Spoilers, as ever, for all of California.
If you want to watch California. The opening scene is two people in an abandoned industrial zone and Brad Pitt dropping a rock on their car or some kind of metallic thing.
Yeah.
He doesn't have a methodology. He just likes...
But proudly, he doesn't have a methodology.
Yes.
Which is the best thing about this.
Sure.
We'll get into it.
I just want to say as kind of a preface for maybe what my problems with this film are, is that I think the things it sets up as interesting are kind of genuinely interesting, but not as clever as it thinks they are. And again, that's the thing that always concerns me. I don't know.
Sure. I can see that.
But, Morphe Joseph.
No, all I was going to say was your assessment of my... I gave it 3.5 stars on Letterboxd.
Yeah.
So you were right.
Okay.
When I reflected on it, because there's stuff in here that I really, really like.
I think I'm glad you gave it 3.5 stars. I think that means not that anything would turn me against you, but I think that's more... That's more comprehensible to me.
Okay,
I think I would understand 4 stars. I'm just like, okay, yeah, that's within a realm of viewing that I could imagine.
And I think this is the thing that will make you less happy about me giving it 3.5 stars. I think it needs to be meaner. I think it needs to be bigger. I think it needs to be crazier. I think it's not quite there.
Yeah.
And I think the reason why I think this, and my biggest problem with the film, almost the reason I've taken it a star and a half off, it's too much like Natural Born Killers.
I haven't seen that.
Which also stars Juliette Lewis, is released the year later. And Natural Born Killers is a 5-star film for me.
Okay.
And Natural Born Killers is big and gonzo and weird. And it's also about serial killers doing a crossroad trip, but becomes political. It's Oliver Stone, typical weirdness.
I mean, of course it is. There are a couple of films I kept thinking about during this. One of them was Manhunter.
Sure.
The Mann film.
The Michael Mann film.
Yeah.
Manhunter is not as grotesque throughout.
No, but it's much weirder, right? With the tiger scene and stuff. And I think I thought about that specifically. I don't even think this
is a perfect film.
It's a wonderful
Manhunter
film.
Manhunter is perfect.
I don't think this is referenced specifically in Manhunter, but this seemed to be going for the type of weirdness. There's a scene towards the end where Brad Pitt has captured this woman and they're in a room and Brad Pitt's talking to some people, turn around, the camera switches perspectives and you find out he's talking to mannequins.
Yeah.
And that felt very like, oh, you're trying to be that kind of film.
That set piece is capital G.
I knew great, you would think that, I think. Yeah.
I think it's really great.
I wonder if it being in this film, being in a different film, I feel like I could think that too.
Okay, sure. So let's do a tiny bit of context do the film a little bit. The biggest context that I think we need to talk about is Brad Pitt gave an interview this very week.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Which you linked me to.
Yeah, New York Times did a series on the 10 great actors from this year.
Yeah. And he, in that, said, I took the quote because it really fucks with everything we've been doing so far in this podcast.
I think it enhances it.
He said, the interviewer says, have you lied on camera? And Pitt says, I must have somewhere. Some days you're drowning on set. You just can't quite get there. And the interviewer asks, was there a performance where you never got your head above water? And Pitt replies, my first 15 years of them.
Yeah.
That's wrong.
I don't know if
it is. He definitely gets his head above water in Cool World.
I don't think that's true.
You were on the Cool World episode saying how good he was.
I just told you I'm very suggestible.
He's great in Cool World. He's great in Johnny Suede. That is not the performance of someone who's struggling. The films are struggling. He is assured.
But that might be what he... I don't know if he's assured.
I want to cut in right here like a super cut of you saying amazing things about a number of performances we've already seen.
And I bet better than
the performances of most actors.
Probably, yeah. Well, partially, right? I think Brad Pitt is extraordinary in his body. And I do not know if he's gotten dialogue right yet. Looking back.
No.
I think that might be true.
I don't... That's no way. The performance in Johnny Suede...
Cool World's so silly. Johnny Suede's so silly.
But Cool World, what does it mean to be, like, you know, under the water? It means that you're not on top of things. He is so on top of Cool World. He knows precisely what that film is aiming for in a way that nobody else in that movie does. He touches on noir tropes while understanding the film that he's currently in.
He's better than everyone else in that film, but I still think you can... It's like... actorly in a way that is not ideal. I think there's still this sense of performance to it that would be better if it was absent. He's almost there, and he's very interesting. He's the most interesting thing about the film. He's doing the most interesting things, but there is still this sense of working it out, I think.
You have broken my heart, just as Brad Pitt has broken my heart. He's
at least I'm on Brad Pitt's side.
He's definitely great in Cool World. Capital G. That's a great performance from a great actor.
I don't know if it's possible to give a great performance in that film.
In a bad film, full stop, or in that particular film?
It's just such a mess, right? Like, there's just so much going on. There's so much he's unaware of. I think possibly we have different interpretations of Get Your Head Above Water. And maybe yours is more right than mine. But...
I just think he's saying
there's a sense of desperation. There's a sense of actorliness.
I don't feel desperation whatsoever. I feel such suave... connected on top of what he needs to be doing.
We're not even halfway through the first 15 years.
I know. Well, but the interesting thing he says in this quote, which is why it's a good interview to bring up, he talks about California like the first time he was onto something. And I'm going to say something a little bit controversial. I think his performance in this is a step backwards.
I agree.
I think he's not very good in this film. I think he's way better in a bunch of films we've done recently. He seems weirdly restrained.
He stops doing stuff with his body. There's none of that.
No.
I think there are some things that really annoy me about... See, it's interesting because I think I maybe didn't say this super clearly, but one of my guesses was that you'd like this performance.
Okay.
And I think because it's... just because it's different, right? Like, it's a new thing that he's leaping into. There are some pretty embarrassing choices in this performance. It's probably his least steady performance since Dark Side of the Sun.
I agree. I agree. Because he doesn't...
The snorting, right?
The snorting. He's got this, like, winky half face that becomes, like, a rictus mask. It limits his expression. He's like... He's in the gimp suit from Dark Side of the Sun, but that's his whole fucking face.
There's a moment where he winks, and you can barely tell because he's already basically winking all the time.
Yeah, and you know what? I wondered genuinely if it was the thing hampering this performance. He's got a lot of facial hair.
Yeah, he's hirsute.
Yeah, it's like a death mask. He doesn't look like Brad Pitt.
That's a nice way of putting it.
I don't know what the fuck was... So not only... So he says in this interview, it was the first time, the explicit phrase he uses, which was very interesting to me, is he said, I stopped doing the leading man stuff and I started doing the character actor stuff.
Which I hope he's not this off screen.
Well, the crazy thing is he's definitely better as a character actor than a leading man.
Yeah.
That I think is something that will emerge in this podcast with some exceptions. For sure. I think in what are the best performances? Best performances, Assassination of Jesse James, Killing Them Softly. I actually also think he's extremely good in By the Sea.
I haven't seen that. I would say Moneyball's up there and he's a leading man in that, but he's a deferential leading man.
Absolutely. And whenever he's best, I think he's doing fucking crazy shit. And he's also, as a result, slightly sidelined in the plot. Because he's not meant to be the audience surrogate in those films, because he's completely weird. I mean, the great thing about Killing Them Softly is it has no audience surrogate, but we'll talk about that. Insane film. Perfect film.
It's so funny. I saw that at the cinema. Which is weird, right? That a film you're obsessed with. Like, I just happened to see it at the cinema. I do not remember why. And I remember coming out of thinking, huh, pretty good.
And you haven't seen it since then?
No. Well, I'll wait till it comes up on the podcast.
Capital M masterpiece.
I could believe that, but it might be...
extraordinary.
It feels very similar to The Counselor in my mind.
Yeah, sure.
Both films I've seen once at the cinema.
I think Killing Them Softly is slightly better. But they inhabit the same universe. Yeah, you know who Pitt is out-acted by in this film, which I think we should talk about. Was that correct in saying you don't like David Duchovny?
Is he making any choices?
Yes. Can we briefly sidebar on David Duchovny?
Okay.
Did you go out with the X-Files?
No, I've never seen an episode.
Are you fucking kidding
me? No, I've seen like, I was all about, and this is to my, I'm Whedon shows. I watched like Buffy and Angel and stuff. So that was kind of my wheelhouse.
It's just very cool to trash on him now. But yeah, Buffy rules. Show.
Yeah,
it's definitely a good show.
I had a dear friend, Andrew, gave me a list of the order in which to watch all Buffy and Angel, so you'd get the
fantastic.
Right. So I watched them just after they'd aired.
I like Angel too. That's good. You're not meant to
good.
Like Angel.
Yeah, no, I think Angel's good. Pretty good. It's a weird.
Joss Whedon is a smart guy. Joss Whedon...
He knows how to structure a script.
He's very good...
He makes some good jokes.
Yeah, and he's funny, and he reads the right stuff. He's very embedded in the comics world, and he like, when he steals from the right people to steal from.
I thought the first Avengers movie was pretty solid.
I don't know if I follow you there.
Okay.
I just feel that film is, like, made by a committee. I don't see
definitely.
Huge
I mean, he complained a lot about making that film.
Did he?
Yeah, he hated it.
Well, then he went and made fucking Much Ado About Nothing.
That was a direct response,
For like $20,000. Wouldn't you love to be able to do that, Dan? Yeah. Wouldn't you love to be in a career where you can like take millions of fucking dollars, complain about it, and then just go and do a fucking Shakespeare in your house? You know, it's mostly set in his house. Whatever.
And just gather a bunch of like your actors and be like, all right, this is what we're doing.
Yeah. What a life. Can you imagine? Do you think you would care about climate change if that was your life?
Hard to say.
I think I wouldn't.
I mean, you've got it. Yeah, you just got... You can do what you want, right? That's the thing, is you're not struggling for anything.
No.
Although, I mean, we don't need to get too into Joss Whedon. He's got...
Yeah. Why do people want to cancel Joss Whedon?
Look, I could get this wrong. I feel like his...
His ex-wife said he was a dickhead.
But, yeah... I feel like anything I say could be slanderous because I've forgotten the details. This is not stuff I'm storing.
That's the best, man. That's the best kind of defamation. Defamation by accident. Imagine if I can happen to be in a court case and there's Joss Whedon.
They're playing segments of the Radford cast. That will happen. That is in our future. We're going to be sitting in court one day while a judge plays
Peter
segments.
Peter Handker. Who else have we defend? Well... The X-Files is a show that was extremely important to me. In a way, it probably seems extremely obvious. Like, it does all the things that I find extremely interesting. And my hot take has always been that David Duchovny is one of those actors who always plays David Duchovny. Okay. He's playing every role he's ever played in this film. He doesn't act like a normal human being. And if you accept that he's not meant to represent a normal human being, it clicks into place.
What's he there for?
He's a fucking alien in this film.
Yeah, why?
Because I think if you... I guess that's the other conversation. What is this film, capital A, about?
So...
Go on.
Yeah,
What's your read?
Well, it seems to be about Duchovny, or like a person who watches serial killer movies or like narrativizes violence or dramatizes suffering, getting exposed to that and having to deal with it. But he
and being intoxicated by it first.
Yeah, but nothing. Like, yes, yeah, sort of. But
they have a real bromance, Duchovny and Pitt, like a very open, like it's stylized as a friendship. The film ends on a note of like weird melancholia about the end of their friendships.
I don't think this film is clear enough on its message.
So I think the film is about, and this leads into what you said about the slightly problematic issues. I think it's capital A about class tourism.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's about Duchovny and his, like, art girlfriend who, like, takes these very wanky, like, upper-middle-class photographs, being fascinated by the lower class and fetishizing the lower class in a way that Duchovny's performance feeds into him being so fucking boring. So this is a film about a man who has, like... Duchovny has almost no interior life. And if you wanted to defend what we should say is... at times cringeworthily embarrassing voiceover with like Duchovny narrates
he's wrong about most things.
he talks about like writing fiction means like dreaming and the dream has no like,
so there's an incredible moment where they knock on the door of the first house they go to, which if someone was killed at, and this guy opens the door and is like, he's like, do you mind if we come in? So him
Duchovny
and his partner, Duchovny's there, his partner is there, and Brad Pitt and
Juliette Lewis
are hanging around the house. Brad Pitt steals a bag through the window. And when Duchovny's knocking on the door, he's like, hey, could we come in and take a few photographs? And the guy's, I think he calls them ghouls, and says, no, go away. And then there's this Duchovny voiceover where he's like, he didn't let us in. I guess he just wanted to forget the past. Which, you know, people repress things or whatever. People ignore the dark side of life. It's like, no, you maniac. You said someone was killed in this house. We want to come in and take some photographs. What are you talking about?
I don't think
the film knows that.
I think you can be generous and say the film does know that.
I think you have to give it a little bit too much credit. Because it does that again and again.
But, so what are the things that are definitely true? So this is a film about what I think a bad writer. The voiceover, I think, is meant to be cringeworthily bad. Obsessed with this kind of like... this romanticized vision of the serial killer and the lower class, who then tries to emulate them completely. So Duchovny's performance and voiceover makes sense in that he's just a blank, bland nothing. And Dan's making the trademark Dan face. My evidence for that is you're definitely meant to, for a lot of the film, like Pitt and Lewis and not like Duchovny and his partner. You particularly don't like Duchovny's partner. For at least the first two acts of the film.
I didn't feel that at all.
I felt...
I quite liked it. I was on her side.
She was so condescending to them. That's the point,
but
right?
But so is the film.
No, I don't think that's true.
They're especially Juliette Lewis. She is so... Because you know the film's condescending to them because when it's just them, it treats them the same way. It's not through the...
No, it doesn't. You treat... The film allows them, like, a genuine moment of, like, sensitivity when Lewis says to Pitt, sing me a song. And they sing like some weirdo. Sure. Do your balls hang low? So that's. I don't think that's meant to be ironized.
I think it's patronizing to them.
I don't think that's true.
That's how I read it.
I think it's more antagonistic and condescending to Duchovny and his partner, because you know almost nothing about them.
But she's right to want to get rid of them, right? Like, so Duchovny's partner is like, "What are you doing? These people are maniacs. We shouldn't be driving with them." And she's correct. She's the only person in the film who has the correct point of view.
She's ultimately correct, but she only thinks that because she's snotty. And she
thinks
that
snottiness is justified.
And she's...
She
pretends to be nice to Lewis, but she's actually very condescending and rude to Lewis.
She kind of comes around to her, right? She cuts her hair.
And then says something extremely rude and antagonistic afterwards. I think this film is secretly extremely class conscious.
I think you're giving it too much credit. I think this is where we differ then, because I think I just didn't see that. Maybe, look, I watched it partially while I was making some biscuits. Maybe that's part of the problem.
Well, it made me think of, I thought in its narrative and in what I'm talking about, have you seen Mindhunter, the David Fincher show?
No.
Okay. The arc of the main character in Mindhunter is the arc of David Duchovny in this. Okay. Without spoiling Mindhunter,
sure.
Because I think people should watch it. That's a show about someone who treats violence and horror, and particularly violence and horror committed by the lower class, as like interesting in a way that's problematic. And the film is definitely saying you shouldn't do that.
I don't think it is, because David Duchovny, so there's one of the weirdest Chekhov gun, like most on the nose Chekhov gun scenarios I've ever seen. Brad Pitt gives David Duchovny a gun.
Teaches him how to shoot.
Obviously, David Duchovny ends up shooting Brad Pitt in one of the film's final scenes. Brad Pitt has tried to make David Duchovny kill a cop earlier in the film, and David Duchovny refuses. And Brad Pitt has made a thing about, like, how can you write about serial killers or killers if you don't understand them, if you haven't killed someone? So, in fact, Duchovny graduates to being able to write about serial killers by killing Pitt, and has the most saccharine, like, pointless reflection at the end, being like, oh, you know, what's the difference between him and me? He has, we feel remorse, he doesn't. He never felt remorse, he never felt, like, regret or whatever. Which is the wrong lesson to take, but he did what Brad Pitt told him to do in order to get to the place that he needed to get, which was a rich author on a, living on a nice house, in a nice house on the beach.
But I think, I don't think the film is endorsing in the way that you think the film is endorsing. I think Duchovny's meant to be a sap. And the reason why I think this is, so the film ends with Duchovny's, it's quite bad optics for her that we don't know that actress's name. I'm going to look it up right now.
She was,
I don't think she did a good job. I think if
she's the least known actress in there.
I think if you want to rank the four performances, and this is maybe slightly contentious, Juliet Lewis, number one. Number two, David Duchovny. Number three, Brad Pitt. Number four, Bad Optics. I can't remember her name.
Joe's looking it up. I want to say
Michelle Forbes.
Michelle Forbes. I should tell you the truth. For 90% of this film, I was like, Juliet Lewis is doing a terrible job.
No,
just awful. She's playing a caricature. So
good.
She's just playing a child.
She's definitely.
And I know, and that's. I know. She's, but that's not an interesting decision to me.
That's the most interesting decision.
She also kind of looks. She looks like 15.
You know, her and Pitt are dating in real life at this time.
Oh, and that's interesting. That's interesting.
You know, and she was just finishing up in Martin Scorsese's Cape Fear when she does this, which she literally plays like a childlike victim of a kind of serial killer. And that's not so much because she was trying to make choices. That's because if you're an actress working in that time, Hollywood is very sexist, and your roles are victim of serial killer or naggy housewife.
For like, sure. Which we have both of these women are kind of that.
I think she's so good. I think she's capital G. And it's my favorite thing. She's doing capital, whatever.
Differentiation.
I think it's an extraordinarily nuanced and intelligent performance.
I thought it was high school.
I am shocked how much we're disagreeing about this film.
I mean, I think it's a lot of it is because we watched it separately.
I can't believe that you don't like this film.
I think it's cruel and unnecessary.
I knew you were going to say that. But that's a deal breaker.
It's a deal breaker because it doesn't earn its cruelty.
We should talk a little bit about the violence, because this film is like,
it's interesting in its violence.
And it's widely discussed as a horror film, which
that's only because Brad Pitt squints. I think, like, it's because he looks, like, kind of monstrous.
He does.
And, like, but it's not, I didn't experience it as a horror film.
No,
I quickly looked up some reviews, and Roger Ebert loved it.
Yeah.
And said something like, the tension never lets up. I actually didn't feel that tense.
No.
Even scenes that should feel really tense, I didn't, and whether or not the film means them to, but scenes that would traditionally feel tense didn't feel to me like they were shot for tension.
No. Well, we could also say that the director, Dominic Senna, has, when we talked about this film ahead of time, you called it one of the craziest filmographies that we've ever covered.
Yeah, tell me. I've forgotten.
I think he's kind of interesting. I think some of the choices in this film are kind of interesting, but I agree that he's no, you know, people compared this film, what I thought you were going to say when you said you were reading the reviews, people compared it a lot to The Night of the Hunter, which is a film that you watched extremely recently and is like a top 10 film for me. It's not dreamy and weird enough to be Night of the Hunter.
No, it wants. But here's why I think there are a few changes in this film that could make me come down on your side. It just didn't feel intentional enough. Like, the Brad Pitt's parole officer with a terrible hacking cough, it's like, we'll give this character a trait. He has hacking cough.
He has hacking cough and what else?
A claw for a hand. A claw!
Talk about fucking burying the lead. We'll give him one trademark and nothing.
Okay, two traits. He's got a massive metal. That's worse. It's not content. It's just like it's superficial. It's just
a grotesque vision of the world where everyone's gross and disgusting, and you're meant to think at the beginning that Duchovny and his girlfriend are a tourist in that world, and you actually learn that they're grotesque and disgusting in a different way.
But that never they're condescending but and patronizing. But they're never punished for that.
Duchovny and Lewis?
Yeah.
I really don't imagine that I'm being crazy about the final. I think the final scene is meant to be sad, and you're meant to see like hollowness in Duchovny and Duchovny's. I've already forgotten their name.
Oh, because Carrie's the character. Forbes, name. Michelle?
Michelle Forbes. Forbes.
Normally, yeah. It's you reminding me who the characters are.
I think that final scene. So, the final scene is Duchovny's written a book about everything that's happened. Forbes comes in and is like, "I've got an art show." It's meant to be like happy, happy ending. And then they look at each other, and it's quiet, and a tape recorder is playing, which we've seen them use throughout the film. And they walk out of shot, and then you hear the voice on the tape recorder, and it's Lewis, Juliette Lewis, saying like, "I hope you guys don't forget us." Which plays into the fact that she knew that she was being exploited by them in like a class tourism way. Lewis throughout the film is aware that they're kind of using her a little bit, and she's like, "Cause we're real friends." And then
you're the only friends we have.
And then it fades to black. That is meant to be sad, and I think it is meant to say that like Duchovny and his girlfriend are not walking off into the sunset. There is a melancholia. There is like some. They are slightly hollow and slightly empty.
Sure, I think the film is trying to do that, but I don't think it's had a coherent enough vision in order for that to work. And I understand that this is absolutely not the only way class works, but they're also... Oh, well, I guess they got rich... Oh, okay, so I guess you can say they got rich off them, which is something, because I was going to say that...
It's exploitation.
Forms are poor.
The ending reminds me a little bit of the ending of Taxi Driver. The ending of the Taxi Driver is like this man who... is monstrous and unethical, does an unethical thing that just so happens to line up with society's ethics and the way that society allows people to do things, and so is hailed as a hero. Ooh. And I think that's the Duchovny character. You gradually learn that he is quite grotesque. He's written this book about this grotesquerie, but because we allow those like true crime books, like it's an endorsed societal violence, he walks off into the sunset with money. I can't tell if that's the Dan face of like you're so completely wrong.
No, I'm open to that. That's an interesting reading. I just feel like I'm not sure if the movie's doing enough to make me believe that, and I don't know if even if it is trying to do that, I'm not sure it handles it well enough.
Okay.
Not that I want it to beat me over the head with that more comprehensively.
It does end literally in a nuclear testing site, the mannequins that you're talking about.
Yeah.
So it has some awareness that we're talking about like a decayed vision of America.
That's true. But isn't that just like more pornography in the same way that Brad Pitt and Juliette Lewis' characters are kind of like they're trailer trash, right? Sure. Literally live in a trailer park.
But all cinema is pornography.
That's true.
It's like Larry Cohen, the exploitation filmmaker. He was always like, "I hate the term exploitation. Everything is exploitation. Everything's porn."
Well, I guess that's my question, right? Is if this film is condemning a voyeuristic understanding of violence, then what does it think of its audience?
Yeah, it implicates the audience knowingly. That's not a stretch.
But then that's just saying, well, fuck you. Yeah. Which isn't... I don't want art that does that.
I'd love art that says fuck you to me. We just quickly have to do Dominic Senna filmography. He was a music video director, which you can definitely tell.
Yeah, you can.
This film is a music video. So, Gone in 60 Seconds. Nicolas Cage, Angelina Jolie film. So, Jolie and Brad and Pitt have both
Six
worked
degrees.
With Dominic
Senna.
Swordfish. The Halle Berry. Like, that is a... bad film. John Travolta with a little goatee, rough. Season of the Witch, the Nicolas Cage film.
Really? Yeah. Not shocking.
No good. California, White Out, released in
2009. These aren't in chronological order, are they?
No, these are the letterbox order. Kate Beckinsale as a US Marshal assigned to Antarctica. Sounds pretty good. And then Rhythm Nation 1814, which is a short film starring Janet Jackson. So,
sure,
I can see that you will hear that filmography and think this guy is not like deeply embedded in issues of class. But as we've litigated on an episode, I don't care.
Might it just be that the film is accidentally revealing these things? I'm fine. I don't want to read too much into intentionality. Like, that doesn't matter ultimately. But it does seem to have, if there's a kind of haphazardness to it, the way it's being depicted, then that makes me less likely to do the work to try and draw out a more sympathetic reading. Because I feel like this film is really showing you two caricatures of American poverty. And I want to be sure that you're smart enough, like that this film is smart enough to unsettle that in interesting and, you know, intelligent ways. And I
think the interesting, intelligent way is the shift from meeting Pitt and Lewis and being like, these people are grotesque and disgusting, and then shifting. I definitely shift and think Duchovny is a prick. He's a bland prick who, like, wants to live this life, but he can't do it. He's so obsessed with Pitt, but, like, just can't understand it. And his partner is a snoot who is, like, looks down her nose at these people. And I almost immediately, when those two couples clash, I almost immediately shift onto Pitt and Lewis, even though I'm extremely aware that Pitt is a murderer.
He's not just a murderer. He's, like, abusive to his girlfriend and, like, generally horrific. Sure. It's not, like, he has the signal, he has the markers of, you know, like, he's unhygienic and, like, tattered and scrappy. But he's also a terrible person.
But like, Lewis is not.
No.
Lewis is the moral center of the film.
Yeah, that's way definitely
more likable than Duchovny's. And when she dies, she's killed off screen
By Pitt.
In a way that I think is deliberately is felt emotionally. Because this is not a film that usually holds back from showing you violence. And I think the reason why it holds back from seeing her die is out of sensitivity for the fact that it's encouraged you to really, really like her.
Yeah.
And it's sad. It's sad when she dies because she did... I mean, she dated a murderer, right? Yeah. But she didn't really do anything.
Well, she's... There's a couple ways of understanding her, right? Like, this is a film where no one has histories as well. Like, no one in this film has a history. They're all ciphers, basically.
Which is fine for me.
I think I'm a little, maybe too much of a Freudian for it to be totally fine. But I just want... Like, Brad Pitt's dad was... in the Klan, possibly. That's kind
that's
of all you
kind
get.
Of a funny line.
That is kind of a funny line.
Pitt is going through photographs that Duchovny's partner took, and there's a photo of a guy with a Klan hood on, and Pitt is like, oh, daddy.
I know him, that's my dad.
Yeah.
She's built up a lot of defense mechanisms that are very deliberately...
Lewis.
Depicted throughout the film, right? She refused when... So, there are a number of turning points in this film, but probably the key one is... When Forbes convinces Duchovny that Carrie and Early, is that their names?
No, Forbes is Carrie.
Early
is Pitt.
That's what I mean. Sorry, Carrie and Early. Yeah. So Carrie convinces Early that she says it's them or... She discovers that Pitt has been to prison, that he has a gun. She's like, it's them or me.
Which is... don't you think that's a deliberate overreaction? She's ultimately right, but it's fine to have a gun and have a fight with a police officer.
I would not want to be... on a long road trip with... No, she's also someone... She knows that he's abused Juliette Lewis at that point as well.
But that's not what she cites as the problem. And I think we're meant to not like her for that reason.
True. This feels so complex. Like, this feels like such a series of, like, little branches on the tree. He's clearly a monster. At this stage, he's clearly unpredictable. I do not want to be driving long distance with someone with a gun.
It's so interesting. Maybe it's our different relationships with on-screen violence. Maybe that... I am less, like, repulsed by violence, which is definitely true.
Every piece of violence I see on screen has an emotional cost for me, especially graphic violence.
We were walking through Newtown and I was flanked with my very good friend Dan on one side and my fiance Brianna on the other side, and you were both talking about your relationship with violence, that you feel it. Deeply, like when someone's shin bone cracks, you feel the shin.
Yeah, Suspiria, right? I even thinking about that sends shivers through my body.
That's bonkers to me.
You tweeted something today which I didn't like because I don't agree with it about, Von Trier talking about
Noé.
The house that Jack
it
built.
It was Gaspar Noé.
Was it Noé?
Yeah, it was Noé talking about
Von
Trier.
Sorry, okay.
So you didn't even read it. You just got angry at me.
I did read
it. What's wrong with the modern culture?
Just read the headline.
Yeah. Exactly.
Well, he was saying that it would be... I mean, he was talking about House of the Jack, but a notoriously violent film, saying it's not real. If it was a documentary, it would be terrible.
Yeah.
But it's not. It's joyous, he says, I think.
Yeah. I didn't say that I agreed with that.
No,
I said
no,
that
that's
I think
true.
About
that's,
it all the time.
That's true, but what it made me think about is That's your argument, right? Often, yes, around violence is that it's not real. So
it's not real, and also it doesn't look real. It's a big thing for me.
I haven't seen that much violence in my life, which is a blessing.
I don't. I mean, it's a conversation worth having, right? Because we talked about my attitudes to violence.
Yeah.
There are films that exist out there that people in my circles of weirdo horror people really like that are extremely realistic and, like, extremely focused on the horror and the pain in a way that I just don't like. There's a film... There are lots of these films that are, like, direct-to-video films, so they're shot on videotape, which means they look very scary. There's one called Fetus, which I watched once, and I was like, I just don't want to do this.
Okay.
Which is all violence, and it's all very realistic violence. I'm not interested in realistic violence. I am definitely interested in violence. As long as there's enough artistic remove, the remove that Noe is talking about, that I'm not thinking about, like, what the room smells like when this violence is happening. Hmm. That sounds crazy, but that's,
no, that's,
like,
that's interesting to me.
It was my birthday recently,
mm,
and we watched Scanners,
yeah,
the David Cronenberg film.
I was there, and
Dan was there. My housemates were there. Brianna was there. In my defense, I repeatedly said, "Does someone else want to choose the movie?" Nobody did, so I chose Scanners.
It's always a fraud. It was fine. I like Scanners. I'm glad I saw it.
It's a great film. Brianna is hypersensitive to violence.
Yeah,
and I said to Brianna, "Listen, there's someone's head explodes in the first 20 minutes of this film, and that's pretty rough." And I didn't say anything else.
Huh.
And you were all stunned at me because you feel like the climax of Scanners, which is two people have a telekinetic battle where, like...
Spoiler alert for Scanners.
Yeah,
you should... But it's fine. You should watch Scanners, but you can know about the telekinetic battle.
Doesn't spoil anything to know that there's a telekinetic
no
battle. There's, like, veins popping in people's head and blood spurts.
Their skin is sloughing. I think it's pronounced sloughing. Anyway, sloughing off.
Yeah.
Don't even ever use for skin that word. S-L-U-G-H.
The violence at this telekinetic battle...
Mm. I found much more traumatizing than the head explosion.
That's insane! Because it's a cartoon at the end!
Doesn't matter.
It doesn't...
No, I can imagine my skin falling off in a telekinetic battle. But it's like their bodies are falling apart.
What are you
apart.
Scared of? What are you scared of?
Do
you know that when blood comes out blue, and then it oxygenates, and then it turns red? When you cut a vein...
I've cut myself. It's not blue initially.
But when you cut a vein... And
this is upsetting to me.
Lots
Joe's
of blood is pumping.
Gesturing. Maybe we should put an extra content warning. You know we have to put content warnings on every podcast that we put up because of swearing. Anyway, it doesn't matter. We can get in trouble with
iTunes. Which is a problem. I swear a lot.
Yeah, well, no, it's not a problem. But it's fine. Whatever.
It doesn't look like real violence.
It doesn't...
So what are you scared of if it doesn't
look
like
real
violence?
Is the question of what I'm scared of. Okay, so a scene I want to return to because it's the scene in the cinema that's probably most upset me. In a film that I, at the time, liked, still think is fine, have complicated feelings about, would need to see it again to really think through, but that's not the point. Suspiria, the new one, there's a girl who gets, a device emerges from the floor. Content warning for anyone who's upset about violence being talked about, splinters her shin, and you can see bone coming through the shin, and she is screaming. Even now my feet are tensing. Like, I feel smaller, my muscles shrink, like my heart rate probably rises. It feels like it could happen to me.
But it definitely couldn't happen to you. A coven of German witches, I promise you, you will.
It reminds me of my embodiment.
Shin. Sure, but that's nice.
It reminds me of my vulnerability to the world.
That's a good thing about horror.
It hurts.
I don't know what the hurting is, though.
I think I am in the majority.
You can't intellectualize it.
You know how when sometimes if people clap really loud, if there's a loud sound, you will blink? Does that happen to you?
I think I don't know.
It definitely happens to me. Like, sometimes really loud sounds, like gunshots, say, will cause me to blink. Oh. Yeah,
I assume so.
Yeah, it has to be very loud, but you blink. I feel like it's a similar physiological reaction.
Sure.
It's like the turning away. But even in...
And I don't understand how that can be the case when that's not... It's not what violence looks like. And it's
not I'm
not
that familiar.
That
I haven't
seen
that many people's shins shattered.
But it definitely, in those circumstances, in that way, it's all artifice to me. I don't
see
anything
although I will
real.
Say... should I talk about this? I'm almost worried about you, actually, not even the listener.
Go on.
Brief content warning for when I volunteered at the RSPCA and saw some animals that weren't doing great.
Oh, Go on.
Oh, yeah, is that right?
Yeah, Joseph. Well, I'm aware the animal thing is different. I'm aware.
No, but that's not even why it comes to mind.
Okay, go on.
Because, in fact, it's inverse for me in some ways. I saw a dog that had been hit by a car. So I was volunteering at RSPCA, doing miscellaneous stuff. And I was in the room for a dog that came in that had been hit by a car, and the bones in its leg were exposed. I'm sorry the Brad Pitt cast has gone in this direction, everybody. I don't know what's going on.
It's insane.
It really
is. What happens when we don't watch the movie together? Yeah, we go it's crazy.
Interesting. I don't know whether to do this more or less. I was like, yep, all right, this is awful, but we have to deal. I mean, I wasn't like on the operating table, but I think I was helping out with bits and pieces. I was like, this is horrifying, but we have to deal with it. And I was like, okay. Like, I didn't have to leave the room.
Sure.
And it's not because it was an animal. I have a sense I would have felt the same way if it was a person. I don't know why, then, fiction is like... So, I guess the thing I'm responding to is you saying that violence in films isn't real, it's not what it looks like in real life, but almost as if violence in real life... Like, I saw a... I'm not going to go through all the violent things I've seen in life. I have seen people in bad situations, and I've been fine. Like, mm-hmm. I saw a cyclist who I called an ambulance on. He was okay, but... He hit the floor and, like, blood was pouring from his head. And I was like, I called Triple O. I was very calm. But if I saw that on cinema, I would be...
Why, then?
Well, maybe I don't know.
No, I don't know either.
Obviously, fiction is evocative. I don't think we have to go that far to think through, like, fiction is evocative. Like, it reaches intimate spaces that reality doesn't. Like, there's a reason I've dedicated my life to reading and writing, more or less. It's because that accesses a plane of existence that complements and enhances experience.
I don't understand, like, a physiological response.
I think maybe I'm just more open to... I'm more open to the world in fiction. I, like, open myself up and let things in, whereas in the world I'm shut off.
But I definitely do.
Yeah, you do.
I'm very easy to... Definitely. I cry a lot of movies. And that, I think, is a similar response. These are complicated questions, right? You touched on one thing that I have to... That will sound like a digression without a point, but it's crazy, and I think about it all the time. Us. The Jordan Peele film, Us.
Good film.
I loved that film. I really still very much like that film. It's like one of 10 good films that came out this year. This year's been so trash for cinema, in my opinion.
I most think 10's pretty solid. Anyway.
Usually, like, I love going to the cinema, and this year I'm like, everything's fucking sucks. Anyway, so I liked Us so much, I really wanted Brianna to mm-hmm. see it. And as I say, Brianna, my fiance, guest on this partner, on this show, guest also in my partnership in my life. I said to
Joe featuring Brianna.
Joe featuring Brianna said...
Probably more like Brianna featuring Joe.
Yeah, I think so. Brianna was like, will I be able to watch this film? And I said, here's what we'll do. I will tell you everything that happens in the film. So you know who lives and who dies. You know where it will go. And I will tap you every single time that there's an incident of violence. So she knew exactly where the film was going to go. We got in and we saw it. And she was, no joke, from about 50 minutes in the film, covering her eyes. Yeah. Barely looked at the screen.
Yeah.
Just couldn't do it. Absolutely couldn't do it. And I walked out and I was saying to her, like, why?
I can't wait to hear what she said. Because she's got insights.
Yeah, she sure does have insights. I said, why? I say it that way because this insight was very cutting. I was like, why? You know what happens to them. What could possibly be the problem? And she was like, I don't like being in the room when someone's screaming, someone's in pain. I just can't do it. And I was like, that's crazy to me. And I was saying the things that I'm saying to you now, right? That, like, it doesn't look like real life. Why should that fuck you up? And anybody who knows me a little bit knows that, like, the big loves in my life are, like, horror movies, philosophy, and animals. And she said to me, imagine a 2-hour film about torturing animals. And imagine if it was all fake, but you heard animals crying and yelping.
Mm.
No matter what I told you about that film, you would not watch it. And she is 100% correct.
Yeah.
So what the fuck? Brianna sometimes says to me, quite seriously, she's like, your obsession with horror movies is it like sociopathy?
Mm.
And my answer is always like, definitely not. But when she says the animal thing, yeah, I don't know what the fuck to say. Is that because I don't feel empathy for human beings?
But you do. You clearly do. You're very sensitive. You're emotional. You're very emotionally intelligent. You have... You spend a fair... More of your time than most people do concerned for others' welfare.
I don't know what it is. I worked in education. I worked with human beings for a long time who I care a lot about.
And that matters to you.
I don't know. I did... feel like a thing that I'm reckoning with in the age of climate change is a quite genuine, you know, having to watch an everyday wake up to read about animals going extinct has been weighing terribly. Like, I have had to like step up my therapy sessions to really talk about. I find it so difficult that I feel myself getting like slightly teary now. I really struggle with it. And as an offshoot of that, something that I genuinely struggle with is a deep hatred of humans doing this to animals. And I have to do all kinds of therapy and all kinds of readings that, like, obviously human beings are part of the ecosystem and, you know, it happens. Sometimes we can talk about climate change like we're custodians of the planet and we drop the glass ball or something, whereas that's not how it goes. But sometimes I genuinely wonder in a way that disturbs myself, like, maybe I'm okay with seeing humans suffer and not animals suffer because I have some vendetta against
my own species. I think that doesn't make sense to me. That's too, like... It's because it doesn't happen on that intellectualized a level.
So what the fuck?
Yeah, then? I don't know. I think it's more complicated. Look, I think this is something we need to return to on future episodes of the podcast.
What time is it?
It's not... We're not crazy. I'm not trying to wrap up. I'm worried we're going to start going around in circles. Because I don't know if any of these questions have answers. But I don't think that's quite right. Because then... Yeah, because these questions just aren't that generalized, right? Like, you're not saying... Like, it would be different if we were talking about disaster movies, say. But we're talking about, like, an individual suffering, which is always a different question.
Sure.
Anyway.
Were you disturbed by the violence in California?
Yeah.
That's crazy to me.
There's serious...
It's grotesque. It's disgusting.
That has so much... Like, if... I don't care about the stormtroopers being shot in Star Wars, but you see people's heads being blown off. I'll tell you the thing that turned me against this film.
In the bathroom when Pitt kills the
I don't want that, but that's fine. Like, that's pointless. Why is it so violent?
Pitt like very violently beats up an attendant and stabs him in the neck in a toilet, and there's so much
blood. Just for some money.
Yeah.
That's the only thing you see on screen. Again, it's like the film would argue that what it's doing is showing Pitt's chaoticness and unmethodological nature.
Are you going to say the thing that you don't like is when he shoots the guy that he's said that he'll let go?
No.
Oh. I don't know then. Why?
Which because at least that's a character move. At least we're learning something about him. We're learning that he's weighing up, will this guy tell on me, and will I show Forbes, Carey, that I'm willing to kill?
Yeah.
And that's what he's like, okay, kill
him. He's smart. The Pitt
character, but there's no reason to kill the man in the house that they invade to win the third act. There's no reason to that. We do not learn anything about it. So they occupy a house. An elderly couple, Pitt and Lewis and
Duchovny.
Everybody. Towards the end of the film, Pitt drags everyone to this house. He's like turned on Duchovny at this point. I think something I didn't actually finish talking about earlier is, we didn't finish talking about, is Carey says, it's them or me. And then Early is like, okay, I'll tell them to go to the next gas station. He does that, and Pitt is like, he says, I ain't taking no fucking bus or something, which is actually kind of a little bit funny.
Pitt's pretty good on page.
Yeah, he is.
I think he actually loses something thanks to Brad Pitt, which is a crazy thing to never say on this podcast.
He shoots the gas station attendant. He takes Carey hostage and then takes everyone hostage and is like, we're going to California. They kill some cops. There's a scene which is again an important scene, where Pitt tries to get Duchovny to kill a cop who's already been seriously injured, and Duchovny refuses to do it. So even then, like, I don't like that scene.
Pitt has a good line. Pitt's like,
you should know.
Pitt's like, it's a mercy killing.
Yeah.
Because Duchovny's reacting like, oh, you're getting me to do this terrible thing by killing the cop. And Pitt has this, like, circular logic. Mm. It's only a mercy killing because he's already shot him, the cop. Yeah. But that's funny, right? The film is aware that that's funny
No, I think the film is just being mean. I think it's like, okay, these are assholes. He's like, it was just putting him in a bad situation. It was giving him the easiest line to try and be persuasive.
You're definitely meant to like Pitt. To an extent.
I I don't think he had...
You're meant to find him interesting.
Any motivation. Yeah, you're meant to find him interesting.
And when he's not on screen, you're meant to think, like, where is he? I'd like to see him.
He has no motivation.
But that matters. The film I can only like that people. Into itself. It definitely does.
Yeah, it does. It does. Of course it does. But again, that doesn't mean you need to... That's different. That has nothing to do with liking him. I know the film's about that. But I can't like someone with no history. I can't like a chaotic person.
Yes, you can.
I don't like bad guys. I can never, in every... In every Star Wars game I have ever played, where you get to choose, or Fable, or whatever, always good. I am
always the baddie.
I am constitutionally incapable. As much as I'm, like, interested in the powers, or the story, or whatever, I cannot bring myself to do it.
You know something extremely funny? I'm the other way around. To the extent that I break games. Like, Red Dead Redemption.
Yeah.
It's not helpful to have a bad...
No.
Reputation, like, it makes the game way
harder.
You
can't go places.
You get a really sad ending. I have to be a bad guy. If I have the choice, I can't do it.
See, that... I mean, that's not surprising. Given
that's why we have this podcast.
I think it is. There's a... After they kill the cops, they go to a house. There's an old woman there. Pitt is like, where's your husband? He sees a photo of the husband. She says, I'm a widow. And then he finds this husband, like, looking in a telescope. In, like, this idyllic scene. And then he...
Kills him.
He kills him.
But he has a good line afterwards. He says to her, you're a widow now.
I didn't actually hear that.
Okay.
But that's just cruel. I learned nothing about Pitt.
You're upping the stakes. You're upping the stakes.
No, he's already killed cops.
But now he's killed a woman and he's left her alive. So what's she going to do? And she does function in the plot because she helps Duchovny. When Duchovny wakes up after getting assaulted at Pitt, Duchovny's like, go and get the cops. She's useful.
She could have done that anyway. He didn't need
to kill her husband. The narrative entanglement. It would be crazy if he walked into a house of some woman and there was a woman there and he left her alone. You have to know that he has some propensity for violence.
I guess, but that just... I would much prefer the story did something completely different because I don't like it going that path. It just... It's so cruel. And, like, it makes me sad. Like, I don't want to be made sad in that way. That's not an issue. Of course someone can, like... live a long life and then come across this absolutely awful... Like, I can't help but think through all the horror of that event and it just makes me sad. And the film's not about them in any way. It's like bringing these two people into the movie, destroying their lives as kind of a slightly functional narrative device. That makes me... I don't like that. That's awful. It's just awful. That's an awful, awful thing in the world and I'm not interested in being shown awful things when I'm not intellectually enlightened by them.
But the film only lands its final point because the stakes have been raised to the point that they are. What?
No, it's absolutely not, because the final point doesn't hit that hard. And the final point, like, you can see the final point coming from miles away.
I still...
You know Duchovny survives because of the voiceover and it's clearly Ryderly. You know he's going to kill Pitt.
Hang on. This film is operating in the noir tropes, and if noir teaches you one thing, it's just because someone's narrating does not mean they survive.
Yeah, but I felt like he would. I wasn't so sure. I was certain.
I've seen Sunset Boulevard. I know that it doesn't...
Yeah, but that's that. Yeah, that's an interesting movie. I was like, well, this is what's going to happen, and I was right because it's not that smart a film. It's not... This is not Sunset Boulevard.
Nah.
You're no Sunset Boulevard. I would say I've met Sunset Boulevard.
It's a great person.
It's a reference to a 1988 presidential debate.
Sunset Boulevard's a great film.
Yeah, it is.
I think
starts with the drowning.
I think this film is leads up to quite a cogent...
I know, we need to see. Imagine if Sunset Boulevard. Imagine if in the pool we saw him like gasping for breath and screaming as he died. Right.
But there are circumstances in which the film could work and do that. It just couldn't do that and then be the different film.
Yeah. Sure, okay. Sure.
Violence is a violent... The Noé...
Why is there...
interview that you made reference to? Noé's point across his filmography. Have you watched much Noé?
None.
I'm way back. You wouldn't watch none?
Is that shocking to you?
Yes.
It's shocking to no listener of this podcast.
I want you to have seen Noé. I think that's what it is. You've never seen Climax?
No.
You would vibe with Climax.
Okay. I'm sure I've seen some. I know I've seen some of... I think I've seen some bits of...
You don't want to watch Irreversible. You wouldn't sit well with Irreversible.
No.
I'm aware of that. I'm not an idiot.
You know, I think I've seen bits of his most recent film in Love. Like, two...
Love is great.
Like, I've just seen, like, some shots from them.
Yeah.
And they look visually interesting. Like, kind of washed out and weird.
Fucking wild.
Okay.
I think you would like Noé. But Noé's big thing has always been that, like... I interviewed him once, so I was almost going to do his voice there, and because he said this to me. He's French Argentinian,
oh, wow.
So he's got like a very strong
accent. He's got a great name.
Do you know what he looks like?
No, actually.
He looks like the person who makes the film that he...
Okay.
He also has an excellent Sight and Sound top 10 films.
All right.
Taxi Driver is in it.
It's a great film.
He's a good boy. I love Gaspar Noé. His argument has always been, like, violence is a tool. Like, beauty is a tool. And so to say that you don't like violence is to say... is to make, like, almost an incomprehensible claim. Because then you're saying you don't like this thing that's used a billion different ways by a billion different people.
Sure.
The violence in something like Star Wars is completely different to the violence in California.
Yeah.
It's completely different to the violence in The House That Jack Built. Even the same director, Von Trier, the violence in House That Jack Built and Antichrist are very different, sure, being done in very different ways. So this film is just using violence to make a point, which I think kind of lands.
I encounter beauty every day. I do not encounter violence every day. Part of that is because I live in a society from which in which I'm largely sheltered from it. When violence is happening to someone, it will be one of the worst experiences of their life. It is permanently traumatizing. It alters. People go well out of their way to avoid it.
You're making a couple of claims that aren't true, though. Some people.
Okay, of course. Okay, we can talk, like,
sadomasochism.
Okay, I'm talking about violence inflicted when it's not desired.
Okay,
sure. The violence has shorthand for that, because obviously, sure, like, watching sadomasochism on film is very different from... So, sure, violence has shorthand for violence inflicted when not desired. Non-consensual violence. Why does there have to be so much of it? I'm fine with it existing, but why do we return to it all the time? That seems odd to me. Like, got to be like 80% of films heavily feature violence. It's the thing about video games as well. For a long time, basically all video games, and this is not a coincidence, this lines up with film as well, the only way in which you can interact with the world is choose to destroy it or not destroy it. Those are your options. You, like, go places and destroy things or don't destroy them. That is your, like, mode of engagement.
But again, you're talking
about... And that's unsettling to me. I think that's a problem. I don't not like violence. I don't like most violence, and I find most of it unnecessary.
But you say we return to violence again and again, and I think you're substituting the word violence for lots and lots and lots and lots of different things.
Sure, I don't like most gratuitous violence.
But, so...
I would prefer less of it.
This is a claim which, like... I think is important, and I think does apply to this film and does apply to what you're broadly talking about.
It needs to be in this film. I just don't know if this film needed to be made. Of course this film needs violence. If it wants to make the point it's making, it has to be violent. Do we need this film? Probably not.
Well, that's the thing, right? So there's this short documentary about David Cronenberg. Like, I spoke to my friend Ned recently, our mutual friend.
Our friend Ned.
Who has been listening to this podcast. Shout out to Ned.
Hey, Ned.
And Ned said... The one that he noticed, we have visual tics and verbal tics.
Oh, mine is the way in which he told me. Or yeah. The ways in which.
And mine is saying, perfect. This person is perfect. I was just about to say, Cronenberg is perfect. I was just about to say that. He definitely is perfect. There's a documentary about Cronenberg where John Carpenter, another great horror filmmaker, says, the thing that people say about David is that he's gratuitous. But because he's showing you violent images which... are not the violent images that live in your head. He cannot gesture to it. He cannot cut around it. He has to show it to you.
That's interesting.
Because if you're trying to guess what he's alluding to, you're wrong. Because he's not alluding to things in the real world. California.
I think that's wonderful.
Kind of fits into that.
I don't think so. I think the violence in it is predictable.
I think it's pretty hyper-stylized, and I think the character's emotional response to it is where the film lives. So I think you have to see it. I think you have to see... Duchovny and Pitt responding to it, because that's what the film is about.
It's such a cliche, right? Like, crime writer experiences crime. Like, that's been done 1,000 times.
The film,
it's interesting because of its failures. I think because Duchovny is, like, absent, because Pitt is weird, because Lewis is making very strong decisions. The script kind of, well, the script has some good lines, but in the Oscars, when they're awarding the Screenplay Academy Awards, this thing happens sometimes where they will... God, they're such... so self-congratulatory. They will show a scene from the nominated film, and the script will float through the film, and it's so onanistic. And sometimes, in this film, you can see the writer being like, this is cool, that's how I felt. And I think I feel that with a lot of films. And I think the things that were kind of good felt very writerly. Although, I actually, because... I wanted to read out some of the voiceover to show how terrible it was and forgot to write it down. I looked up the script. As far as I can tell, the voiceover's not in the script.
Seriously?
Yeah, pretty sure.
That's so weird.
Yeah, I Googled some things. I control F, like some phrases from it, and searched like VO, voiceover, V/O, couldn't.
Maybe the studio made them put it in afterwards to make them to make you like Duchovny.
I'm 80% sure. I would need to like properly look at the script, but I'm pretty sure the voiceover's not in there.
It's a thing that studios definitely used to do.
Well, they did it for Blade Runner, right?
Yeah, exactly. Blade Runner voiceover is better, I think.
Aren't there like four cuts of that film? Yeah.
They're all not amazing.
Blade Runner's a good film. We've talked about this. Okay.
The film for me lives and dies on one moment, which is the moment where Pitt has just killed somebody and Duchovny's sitting there shocked. And Pitt says, in a rare flash of he's pretty good. He says, like, are you going to ask me how I feel? Are you going to ask me why I did that?
Yeah.
That's the thesis of the film.
Yeah, definitely.
That
it's,
that you can't intellectualize this shit. So you have to see it.
But that seems like you I could explain. Like, I feel like,
because it's a comment on your own reaction to it. It's a comment on your own, like, why are you watching this? Can you?
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, yeah. You're watching. I've got to do a podcast. But the film is saying, like, why are you watching this? Can you intellectualize it?
But that seems to me, I think, I mean, I'm about to say something that I bet I could be argued against, could be effectively argued out of. But part of me feels like, if you can explain the thesis of a film to me in a sentence, and I can be like, oh yeah, true, then why do I need to watch the film? Like, do you know, speaking of podcasts, My Favorite Murder podcast reportedly just got like speaking of podcasts, I mean, we're on a podcast, we're not speaking of podcasts, a $10 million deal to, like, I don't know what to do. I think just to do more podcasts.
I don't want
to. True crime is like, that's kind of what, like, I genuinely find true crime, I'm unsettled by the popularity of true crime. I find arguments for it unpersuasive.
I'm not unsettled by most true crime. I'm deeply unsettled by that podcast.
Yeah.
But that podcast is a capital P problem.
I bet it. I haven't really spent much time with it. I should say, like, obviously I'm not unsettled by most true crime. In Cold Blood's a masterpiece. Heaps of good true crime. But
when everyone makes claims about horror movies that I think are not true about horror movies, they're definitely true of My Favorite Murder.
Yeah.
That is fucking ghoulish, that program. I would pay those two people $10 million to sit in a room with the victims of the crime that they're laughing and joking about.
Oh,
like,
that's interesting.
That makes me sound like,
I know
a
very little about it.
Moral. It's a joke. It's like funny. So yeah, say that to the victims. Do it to an audience of victims. That makes me sound like such a.
But then why can't we do? Is also, am I insane, or does this film hint that Brad Pitt is the Black Dahlia killer?
A little bit.
That's so crazy.
A little bit. Pitt. Duchovny asks Pitt. They're interviewing each other on the tape recorder, and Duchovny,
Brad Pitt's kind of messing around,
and Duchovny,
and like mocking Duchovny a little bit.
Yeah, Duchovny's like, "How would you get away with the? Or what's your theory about the Black?
You're a smart guy, yeah."
Which is a famous.
This is before Duchovny knows that Pitt's a serial killer.
Yeah, sure. And Pitt's like, "Well, if I was the Black Dahlia murderer, I would be, but he must be too old, right? Black Dahlia murders happened in the 50s.
Yeah, I guess so.
I think the film's just being insane." It did make me think...
But no, because right towards the end, he's re-listening to that tape.
And it plays again in a way that Duchovny's the twist like, huh? Yeah. I think Duchovny's more like thinking like, oh, that's what Pitt would be doing if he was alive right now, if he got away with these murders. The Black Dahlia did make me want to sidebar briefly on something crazy about the Black Dahlia murder and things that we're talking about.
Okay. I have very little... Like, I know some people read like serial killer Wikipedia pages and stuff. I don't... I mean, I could, but I'm not... Like, I'm not... I can imagine being curious about that stuff, but I'm not someone who knows that much about...
Usually not big on crime, but I'm very big on noir, and, like...
Sure, noir's great.
Dashiell Hammett was someone I was thinking about a lot. Hammett is a big power for me.
I like Seven.
I like Seven.
I know that we'll that's not Dashiell. You know what's fucking great? Sufjan Stevens' John Wayne Gacy song.
Mm.
That is a masterclass in empathizing with a killer.
Yeah, that is a great song.
Yeah, I wish I could remember some of the lyrics.
There's a Sun Kill Moon song.
Yeah, that's a good one.
What's it? I killed my first victim when I was 19.
Mm-hmm. Richard Ramirez, right?
No, that's Richard Ramirez died today. Which is the one that is also like, makes a weird reference to James Gandolfini dying. Fucking Mark Kozlik, man. Talk about someone who's
off the planet.
Yeah, it's not planet Earth. The one thing I quickly wanted to sidebar about Black Dahlia Murder is Elroy. James Elroy.
Yeah, of course.
Who I love, Elroy, who's a crime writer.
I've heard some LA Confidential. I'm not going to say these on the podcast, but I know someone who knows Elroy and I have heard some stories.
I can imagine.
Yeah.
I love him so much. Well, he calls himself like, have you ever heard that
speech?
I find
him insufferable.
No, I love it. He calls himself like, I'm the mad dog of American fiction. I'm the Dostoevsky of the dance
floor. I once wrote a conference paper about Elroy that I never gave in like 3 hours doing, no, never having read an Elroy novel. I hope no one listens to this. But I all of a sudden had to, so I... I was in a situation where I had to maybe present at an Elroy conference that didn't end up happening, but I literally looked at what I could of pages of his book of essays, because I write about essays on Google Books. Like, looked at the available pages and was right, I'm going to make a, like, I had to make an argument about it.
Was it good?
Yeah, I think it was all right. I would have been okay. It would have been totally plausible as a conference paper.
Isn't that scary?
Yeah, academia is almost exclusively bullshit. Yeah, definitely.
The only thing
there's good academics, there's good work done, but most of it's bad.
It's so funny.
I'm happy to go on the record saying that.
Elroy's mother was killed in an unsolved murder. And
maybe by the Black Dahlia killer, right?
And so he's a teenager obsessed with the Black Dahlia. It's the craziest origin story for a writer. I think that's one of the reasons I love Elroy, right? It's like often, like I've interviewed some writers and like, I'm
sure you could interview Elroy.
I'd love to.
He's pretty open to those things, I think. Especially
if we could ask him to be on this podcast.
Absolutely not.
What? What? Because
he's terrifying. He
can be very rude.
Extremely problematic as well.
Oh,
I'm just looking for us not to get cancelled.
No, let's get him on the Mr. and Mrs. Smith episode.
Oh, God.
Do you imagine? One of those.
We should give him a 7 episode, surely.
No, it's something weirder. Get him on like
Ocean's 12. Joe Black
or something. But he just makes me laugh because he's one of those authors who, like, you know, most authors are very boring. It's why a lot of autobiographies are actually really bad.
Sure.
Because they're just like regular old people. So it's such a gem when you discover this guy who's like, my mother was murdered. For years I spent obsessing over the crime. I still write, like, relitigating. Freud would have a fucking feeling.
No, it's true. He's earned it.
Yeah. He's good. He's a good boy.
Okay. He's too much. I just want a little more restraint.
No, I do.
Maybe that's the difference.
It's restraint. But you can't say that because I made you watch All That Heaven Allows recently. And there's nothing restrained about that film. Are you going to say something rude about All
That? No, I love. I'm trying to think because I think that it is restraint. It takes its time getting to where it ends up, right? Well, I don't want to spoil All That Heaven Allows. I want you people to go out, rush out and watch All That Heaven Allows.
Probably the best film ever made.
I mean, I'm not going to say that, but it's very good.
Yeah,
it might be. I've only watched it once. But it feels like it holds itself back. It doesn't hold itself back visually or thematically. But there's...
Do you want to know something crazy that you will, like, make the Dan face at?
Uh-huh.
All That Heaven Allows is a very violent film. And it's violent in
a
similar way to California.
And that it causes me to... Parts of it cause me agony. It's not fine in a similar way to California.
Yeah, it is. It certainly
Rock
is.
Hudson does fall off a cliff. I'll say that.
It's so good.
That is very funny.
Yeah, it's so good.
No, it's not.
It's
Brad Pitt gets stabbed with a shard of glass and I looked away.
All That Heaven Allows works in exactly the same way.
No, it doesn't. It's physical pain.
I knew.
Physical and emotional pain are different things.
It's hyper real in exactly the same way. It's not a real breakup that you've ever seen.
Yeah, but it also makes me sad about breakups. All That Heaven Allows. Exactly.
But
it hurts in that way.
You don't not want to have watched it.
But I don't want it to be happening. But I don't not want to watch it because it's a good film.
California is a good film.
No, it's not.
I'm genuinely surprised that I thought when I was watching this is the thing, right? And maybe it should be our last word before we do Letterboxd. The Scanners thing. So on my birthday, after we watched Scanners, I was like way into the idea of watching the Sam Raimi film Darkman, and I put it on. And Brianna was like, "You have to turn this off." She was like, "I just can't do any more violence."
Yeah,
I cannot mentalize the picture of a person who thinks that Sam Raimi's Darkman is a violent film.
Well, no, but
in the same
Brianna
way
hadn't seen... Oh, wait, she had seen Darkman?
Yeah, I've made her watch that film before.
It seemed violent. Like, from the little bit I saw, there seemed to be some violence in it.
But it's
when people are in pain and vocalizing their pain...
Sure.
And
which
scared,
is, sure,
which they are in the opening of Darkman...
Sure, sure. Which you and Brianna find just...
tortuous.
Naturally, experientially torturous.
Yes.
And I don't.
Yeah, that's the erase all the philosophy. That's the difference, right? It hurts me and it doesn't you.
No. And so when I was sitting there watching California, I was trying to think, what would
enter Dan's mind? And I could see it.
I couldn't imagine you hating this.
But see, I could totally. It's not the violence is not the turn off. I could totally watch a film with that level of violence and have. And like, I really like The Tribe, one of the most viscerally traumatic films I've ever seen.
It's fucked up. I don't know if I like The Tribe.
I think it's a good. I saw it. I think I've seen it. Have I seen it twice? No, I've only seen it once.
See, that this is going to sound like a radical claim. That feels like you're being hypocritical to me, because that film is extremely unpleasant to watch.
Yeah, it is.
And doesn't say anything except for it's very unpleasant.
I think it does say stuff. I think it says stuff about cinema.
I think California is smarter and more coherent than The Tribe.
I mean, it's a while since I've watched The Tribe. Don't watch The Tribe if you're sensitive. Yeah, but I'm interested in its ugliness, and it's maybe looking back, I remember finding it quite moving.
Do you know Brianna fell asleep in The Tribe?
That's crazy. That's I mean, it is very quiet.
I mean, yes. Would you like any final words before we do Letterboxd?
I hope I haven't said anything
that will get us sued.
Changes how you feel about me. No.
But that changes how I feel about you.
Yeah, I don't want to. You thought I'd like this film, and then
you didn't. What would you give it out of? I told you what I thought you'd give it. I said 2.5
stars. See, I could give it half a star.
Seriously?
But, see, this is the problem. This is why I can't use Letterboxd. Because I could give it half a star and 3 stars and both would be true.
I don't want to talk to you about not using Letterboxd.
But this is the problem. I find it so difficult to rate things.
You can just log that you've seen it.
Yeah, okay, I might start doing that, but
you have to do it, Dan. All right, let's do some
One day, I'll surprise you by reviewing a film that is upcoming on the Brad Pitt cast. And you'll encounter my review as we're live on air.
I love that. All right, let's do Letterboxd. Okay. Are you ready?
Yeah.
This guy is called Jacob Knight. He's very active in film Twitter circles that I follow.
Oh, what's the average review of California?
That's a good question.
I bet it's 3.
3.1.
Yeah. Yes.
Are you feeling good?
Yeah.
Jacob Knight is a big guy in exploitation circles. Okay. So I know him a lot. Top 4 favorite films. I don't think you've seen any of these films. I'll start with the one I know that you definitely haven't seen. Have you seen 1980s Night of the Juggler?
I watched it last night.
Shut up. Have you seen Brian De Palma's Blowout?
No.
Excellent.
Yeah, I think I was reading about. Oh, I watched. I saw it pop up on Twitter. I was watching an interview on Johnny Carson with Scorsese and De Palma. It was interesting.
Gene, have you seen any De Palma?
I don't think. I might have. I don't think so. He's so I feel like I would like him.
Yeah, I think you would like him a lot. Very violent, but in ways that you can always tell he's doing
something. Sorry, you asked for final words before. I don't think I quite got out that I'm totally okay with this level of violence if a film has earned it. I just feel that California didn't quite earn it.
Sure. De Palma will solve that for you. Videodrome. You haven't seen that either, no. Have you? And Michael Mann's Miami Vice. Have you seen that?
Yeah. I've seen the first half of it.
It's great.
Yeah.
Incoherent.
I watched it like while I was cleaning or something a few months ago and didn't get through it.
I have the Blu-ray.
I want to see it. I do want to see it. It's it has an extraordinary opening sequence with Linkin Park and Jay-Z.
Yeah. And just cut right to it.
It's crazy.
Yeah. Incredible. And shot on digital video, so it looks like someone's fucking home movie.
Yeah.
That's a great film.
Also, Jamie Foxx and Colin Farrell.
And you know, Colin Farrell's like, I did not remember that movie.
Was he high?
The alcohol problems were so bad. He like immediately checked himself into rehab.
Poor guy.
Same with Stephen King. Stephen King's best book, Cujo.
Oh, yeah.
He's like, I have no memory of writing that. None at all. He's like, it's a pretty good book. Here's Jacob Knight's review. He gave it 4 stars. Perhaps I'm just a sucker for the hazy 90s Tony Scott anti-real texture, but every frame of California is gorgeous. Do you agree with that?
No.
I think we should leave it at that. The rest is this gnarly approximation of what we come to expect from Rob Zombie. Zombie Connection is a really smart one. He's very like, you know, Zombie is all about Hicks.
Mm.
Cap it all with a really distant David Duchovny performance as a privileged writer, accidentally bearing witness to this post-Henry Lee Lucas thrill killer's amoral crime spree, and narrating it all while hopped up on a fistful of lewds. I agree with all that. And you have a lurid time capsule for the type of movies we don't really get any of on the studio level anymore.
It's true.
Surprised by how remarkable this blockbuster VHS rack special really is. It's good context it in.
Yeah, it's kind of, the funny thing is, apart from it being saying it's gorgeous, I broadly agree with that. Like, it's an interesting artifact. I was surprised by this film. I was like, huh, what's happening? And I just think, I don't want to relitigate this, but maybe it's about the difference. It's interesting. Maybe it's the difference between how we take interesting and good. It's like, possible. I'm like, well, this is it. It's trying to do a bunch of stuff that a lot of movies don't. I think also a really important thing in this podcast is I almost only watch films I know I'll probably like, or if I don't like them, it's for a very specific reason.
That's definitely true of me now.
Sure, but you've seen so many films, right? You're so aware of what a shitty version of this film would look like, and I'm just not.
That's
like,
true.
I haven't seen many films that look like this, but are less interesting.
Sure.
And I'm sure you've seen 100 of them.
Twister made me think of Twister. Twister's a terrible film. They look very similar.
So I think that I'm probably, I feel like there's saving grace in its interesting parts, but it doesn't do enough with them. Whereas you are like, oh, this is a film like this, but it's doing these things.
Yeah.
So maybe that's part of the distinction.
Yeah, I think that's true.
I'm a real peacemaker.
Two more Letterboxd.
Please.
Friend of the show, Hayley.
Yeah.
We love you, Hayley.
Hello, Hayley.
Hayley pointed out in the last episode, I said two more like 6 or 7 times.
And you'd edited some out, right?
I edited a couple of out. I said it every time I returned to Letterboxd, I said two more. Two more. Mike D'Angelo. Do you know Mike D'Angelo? Talk about not saying anything I don't want played in a courtroom while Mike D'Angelo is staring. He's a very big film critic.
Okay.
He has a very popular Patreon just for his Letterboxd reviews.
Wow.
I have a real problem with him.
Okay.
In his taste and how he expresses it.
All right.
I think he has blind spots. Top 4 films. Only Angels Have Wings.
Never heard of it.
Hawks films. Hawks is like an all-time great.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen? Yeah, because you like Bringing Up Baby, don't you?
No, I've never seen Bringing Up Baby. What
have
are you
seen
thinking
any
of?
Hawks?
I might have.
Oh, now we got a fucking... You've never seen Bringing Up Baby? We had a long conversation
about
Bringing Up Baby.
His Girl Friday?
Yeah. Hawks also made
His Girl Friday. I love His Girl Friday. Okay. I haven't seen... We've probably talked about His Girl Friday. I've never seen Bringing Up Baby.
You should do all the Hawks.
Yeah.
He did The Big Sleep, Bringing Up Baby, Rio Bravo, Gentlemen Prefer Blondes, the original Scarface, Red River. All of these are great.
Okay. Yeah.
I haven't seen Only Angels Have Wings. Manhattan.
Okay.
D'Angelo's
Still,
second.
That's a... At this point... You're thumbing your nose.
At this point, you're thumbing your nose in a way that is maybe helpful if you're a critic with lots of reviews on Letterboxd.
Sure.
I could almost offend that. He's saying he's aware that...
Yeah, I would say surely there are better Woody Allen films, but that is a different conversation.
I used to like Manhattan, but, I mean, it's clearly...
it's really hard to like.
It's a confessional in a, like, a problematic... Like,
yeah.
I mean, it's autobiographical about the things that he got cancelled. So,
I mean, and also it does the thing that I hate about Allen, which is he's so in love with his own autodidact intellect.
Yeah.
It's
problem.
Just... Ugh.
Double Indemnity.
Wonderful film.
And Exotica. Do you know that
no.
film?
No.
D'Angelo is quite famous for liking Exotica. It's an Atom Egoyan film that I saw because D'Angelo was, like, amazing. And I watched it and I'm like...
Okay.
He's been very rude about films that I love. So he gives it precise ratings out of 100. And he gave California 46 out of 100.
All right.
Which he's translated into 2.5 stars. This movie's stupid. So he's on the Dan side. Here he isn't. But Juliette Lewis is astonishing. I'd written off her early perfs in my memory. I guess that means performances.
Oh, gosh.
Dingleberry.
Come on, Mike.
Wrong, he says, about writing her off.
Okay.
She kind of plays the same role every time, so I'm not entirely sure that I see that as, like... Okay, Robin. Two more.
Oh, my God.
Top 4 films. Debs. I don't know that
Never
film.
Heard of it.
Josie and the Pussycats.
I wonder if there's a film that I've heard of that you haven't.
Have you heard of Debs?
No.
So, yep. Not yet. Have you seen Josie and the Pussycats?
No.
Real good.
Okay.
Real good. Buffy the Vampire Slayer. The movie.
Oh.
You ever seen it?
Yeah. It's fine.
Death of a Cheerleader. Never even heard of it.
No,
that's Robin's top 4.
Okay. Do we know who Robin is, or is this just...
I follow them.
Okay.
Because they like esoteric shit stuff. Being so painfully middle class that you will ignore a blatant murderer in your midst in case society thinks you're a snob, and so you can do your good deed for the little people.
I mean,
that's
your reading.
Whole review. That's my
Although...
Reading.
Yeah, Forbes doesn't, though, right?
Forbes
Carrie,
is the
Carrie
worst
is
character
like...
in the film. Carrie's the worst character in the film.
Yeah.
I think you really... really don't like... You're not meant to like her. Okay. Two more. Film Ape has a pretty funny top 4.
Uh-huh.
The Thing, which you know you haven't seen.
I'll see it.
Things. the movie, which is really horrible, okay, really famously unpleasant, like very hard to find, 1989 Andrew Jordan film. It's good, very hard to find. You wouldn't like it at all. We'd have an extremely fraught conversation afterwards. The other two favourite films of Film Ape, The Thing Again and Things Again. So the top four looks fine. It looks The Thing and Things. Review pretty good. Brad Pitt trying really hard to be crazy while David Duchovny is trying really hard to be normal.
That's a great review.
It might actually capture why there's such a problem with Pitt's performance. Yeah. It's a little bit try-hard.
Yeah,
I think that's accurate. Two more. Silent J. Silent J is got an insane top four films.
Yep.
Possession. Have you seen that? Fantastic. No. Oh, you would have such a good time with Possession.
Okay.
You would have such a good time. I'll lend you my Blu-ray. Right, you should make a high priority. All
right, excellent. Let's
Sam
do it.
Sam Neill, extremely bizarre horror film, but like, I think you would... I'm so excited. I want to make you watch that right fucking now.
I will.
The Bob Fosse film, Lenny, based on the life Lenny Bruce. Of Lenny Bruce.
Okay. I know that Bob Dylan recorded a very strange song about Lenny Bruce for the end credits of that song.
Yeah.
You know what? My dad used to play me Lenny Bruce records. People... I feel like Lenny Bruce has become a, like, oh, Lenny Bruce, people thought he was subversive, but now he's kind of lame.
I really love Lenny funny. Bruce. I love
very,
Lenny Bruce.
Very good jokes. Wonderful stand-up comedian.
Yeah.
And extraordinary rhythm and patter.
Or the come thing. The come is a verb.
You know, I don't know if I've heard that one.
Oh, it's him trying to get around the fact that he can't talk about coming, okay, but he can say the word come.
Okay, pretty good,
yeah,
Lenny.
Pretty good. Thanks, Lenny. Silent J's other two favourite films. Amadeus.
I saw that. I hate every film I was forced to watch in high school. There's four films
that
I was forced to watch in high school. Amadeus, I can't remember. Hurricane. Gattaca.
I don't know Hurricane. There you go.
Hurricane is a boxing film. His song is in that film. Weird that we've spoken about two films in a short period of time around which have a Dylan song as the end credits.
I don't think I've ever heard of that.
I saw it in high school, so it was decades.
Go on, the two ones that you don't like.
Princess Bride.
That film sucks.
Oh, good. Okay, people fucking love that film.
I know they do.
Gattaca,
it's bad.
Princess Bride. Contact.
Contact is crazy.
These are the films I watched in high school. Hate them all.
Contact is the first DVD I ever owned, and it was given to me by someone who was like, "Look at DVDs, isn't that crazy?" That's a fucking crazy.
Yeah, does it
film.
Even have a narrative?
It's like, isn't it just Sagan being like, this
I
could
think
happen.
So, yeah.
And it's like, yeah, it could happen. It's pretty boring.
yeah, it would be more nice if we were going to do this. Why couldn't it be more fun?
Yeah. Matthew McConaughey is in it. That's he blows right. himself up. He's like a religious fanatic. Insane. And fourth and final film, which I know you haven't seen, I also don't like. I was maybe, you know, sometimes, Dan, when I listen back to the podcast, I mentalize. I'm writing a lot about sympathy at the moment, so mentalize keeps cropping up. And I imagine our listeners, and I imagine, like, you listen to a podcast, you're having a fun time, you're enjoying yourself. It's like hanging out with your friend Dan and Joe. Your friend Brad. You've hanging
out
with
Brad.
Yeah,
we can imagine
that. And then Joe, or Joseph, says something that dismisses something that means a lot to you.
Yeah.
And you feel a little quick pang of, like, pain. If you like The Princess Bride, I still love you.
Yeah.
Lots of people I know and respect love that movie. I just think it sucks a little bit. But if we met in real life and you came up to me and you're like, Joseph, what's wrong with The Princess Bride? I would talk to you in a respectful manner.
Joseph is good at that.
Yeah, I would want to know.
And it's not
kind.
False.
No. I just can dismiss stuff sometimes. I had to say that. I'm sorry.
No, I appreciate it. I think that's worth saying.
I also think, I mean, poor Lucas getting caught out on another episode.
I know.
You know a thought I had about Lucas? When...
A man you've yet to meet.
A man I've yet to meet. In the last episode, I said to Lucas, like, let's
meet. He's been listening to the Irishman episode, by the way, so he may have. Anyway.
Sure. I said to him, let's meet. I want to talk about Terrence Malick. And because of that, I imagined meeting someone who would listen to this podcast but didn't know me in person.
Mm.
I would not act like I do in this podcast.
No.
In, like, a really significant way.
Yeah, it's true.
I'm not like that. I'm not like I am now at all. And also...
Maybe not at all.
How fucking boring is this? But I do a radio show.
Yeah.
Which the whole
Give it a plug.
It's called This Is a Love Song. It's on FBI Radio. Yeah. 11 p.m. on a Sunday. And the whole point of that show is to be extremely intimate and calm. It's meant to be... So that's a completely different side to me too.
Yeah.
It's weird, right?
Sure.
They're all me.
Yeah.
They're just so different.
Character.
They are a little bit characters. Silent J. Before... Ooh. Before this film, Brad Pitt was just a baby-faced newcomer who couldn't really act, but was handsome enough to get women to buy tickets to his films.
I don't like this.
Which is probably why he did a lot of chick flicks. This film...
Did you read it?
This film was the first step for Brad to become the awesomely great and badass actor we all know and love. 4 stars.
That's crazy. That's deranged.
I got nothing else
to say. We both disagree with that.
Yeah, I know.
I also, how earlier I was saying maybe Brad's right about not getting his head above water? Hearing him say he was bad before this makes me a bit mad. It's so maybe crazy. I want Brad to say it, but I won't let anyone else say it.
It's crazy. Here we go. 2 more.
Literally. I just want to clarify. I can see in Joseph, sitting across this table from me, that it's not a bit that he said 2 more, maybe 6 times now.
I know that we have to finish because we have to go and see the Michael Bay film, yeah, Six Underground.
We've got
to
walk a dog too.
I know. Okay, 2 more. Last. No.
Oh my God.
And then I'm cutting this person because I don't want to talk.
No, do films. 2 more. Do 2 more. We can't leave our audience hanging. Just do it quickly.
All right. I'm trying to find someone with good top 4 films. All right, crazy.
Is that how you choose these?
Yeah, because I don't want to talk about someone with films I know you haven't seen. Dawson Joyce. It's a great name. I hope that's
a good name.
I hope that's their real
name.
We've got
to call someone in a novel Dawson Joyce.
Yeah, Dawson Joyce is a great name. Top 4 films. Schindler's List. Hot take. Hate that film. I think it's a really bad film.
Okay, I have no real... Fine, it's fine.
I think it's really kitsch in a way that's like actively insulting.
That might be true.
Jurassic Park.
Oh.
I think that's a bad film.
Sure.
You know who was going to direct that film? Tim Burton. Way better film.
Probably.
Doesn't make $100 gajillion. We're not still seeing sequels to that film, but a better film. Raiders of the Lost Ark. We've talked about it before. Bad. Bad film.
Yeah, I saw that recently. Didn't really like it.
Blade Runner.
Mm. Blade Runner's a good film. It's beautiful. It's interesting.
I love people who...
It's not as good as everyone says, but it's very good.
I love people who polish their reviews to the point where they're not saying almost anything at all. Serving as Dominic Sena's directorial debut, California is also his best and most stylish work to date, with excellent performances and plenty of genuinely effective, nerve-wracking moments throughout. The final one. Right, I'm gonna.
That sounds like someone who's never seen it.
Yes.
It sounds like that. Who's that kid who does YouTube reviews?
Lights, Camera, Jackson.
Exactly. It sounds like Lights, Camera, Jackson.
I love Lights, Camera, Jackson. He's an alien sent to Earth to test us. All right, here we go. Suspirian Knight is this person's username. What does that mean? I don't know what that means. The top 4 films. Point Break.
I haven't seen it. The original, I imagine.
Yeah, it would be insane. My hot take is Point Break is a little bit overrated.
Okay.
Black Christmas. We've talked about
it. Oh, I haven't seen that. Yeah, that's recent, right? Oh, no, it's
1974.
What? Wait, yeah,
it's
sorry.
It's been remade.
It's been remade. People are talking about it a lot.
Really excellent and exciting new
film. Is it Blumhouse?
Yes, Blumhouse and a filmmaker called Sophia Takal, who is...
I think I heard her interviewed.
Seriously, go out and watch every Takal film. Okay. She's made like 2 and they're all great. Valley Girl, the Nicolas Cage film, which I have not seen. And... one of the best films ever made, Eyes Wide Shut. Have you seen that film?
No.
I don't know what to say to you. One of the best films ever made.
Okay.
And you would love that film.
Yeah.
Do you not think you'd love
that film? No, I just remember something I wanted to say earlier, but we've passed the topic. But I could say it quickly.
We can circle back.
In terms of horror films and violence, I heard an interview in the New Yorker podcast, a more prestigious podcast than the Brad Pitt cast. New Yorker Radio Hour. Interviewed with Jamie Lee Curtis.
Oh, yeah.
It was like half an hour. It's good.
I love Curtis.
And she does not like horror films.
Yeah.
And she talks about... she went to see something. I can't remember. She went to see a horror film. It might have been... I don't think it was one she was in. But someone gave to her... so they said, you should see this film. But they gave to her like a list of events in the film and like a time sheet. And like, when this happens, cover your eyes and ears... for this amount of time, after you hear the second scream, stop looking. So, you know, she's very
sensitive. What I tried to do with Brianna.
Yeah.
I guess
Jamie Lee Curtis, famously star of Halloween, right? So someone, I guess
and
I
the
just
new
wanted...
Halloween. Also good. Both good films.
I just wanted her as a backup, I suppose.
It reminds me, it's not related, but it reminds me a little bit of Ellen Burstyn, star of The Exorcist, the greatest film ever made. She went and saw that.
That is a good film.
It's
very good. It's excellent. It's a masterpiece.
It's better. That's what I fucking thought. she went and saw that film because she hadn't seen it when it first came out. Okay. She saw it many years later when it was playing at a revival cinema. And she went and saw it, and she was in the cinema, and someone was so shocked and upset mm-hmm. by the film, they fainted and passed out and, like, hit their head
yep.
and burst and ran up and, like, no. shook them awake. And the person woke up, like, screaming, thinking that they had fallen into the world of the Exorcist.
So wonderful.
Such a good story. I love that story. Suspirian Knight says, David Duchovny is the worst. In the words, I don't agree with that. I don't know what this person is saying to me. In the words of Jim Norton, I don't know who that is.
I think it's a British...
comedian?
Maybe.
I'd rather watch Henry Fonda pick blueberries. Which is a bizarre statement because Henry Fonda's great.
That
and
sounds
I would love to see
Yeah, no, that sounds quite delightful.
So of course you'd rather see a really great thing. That sounds great. I also think mid-90s Duchovny was really into Everclear. What the I don't know what the fuck that means.
Do we have to end on that note? One more.
I guess it means
one more.
See, you love it too.
I feel like we have an antagonistic energy that drives the podcast forward.
Exactly. You can use me to like distance yourself from things that you love Dan.
Don't accuse me of anything.
Jack Robinson from Australia. Hi, Jack.
Hello.
Should listen to the podcast.
Yeah, check it out.
Actually, no, you shouldn't, because you gave Silent Night, Deadly Night Part 2 half a star. You're banned, Jack Robinson. Top four films. Jurassic Park.
What is
with
that?
Everyone with that fucking film? Split, the M. Night Shyamalan film.
Strange.
Tricky in terms of depiction of mental illness, but a well-made film.
Okay.
Shyamalan's wild. Alien. Have you seen Alien?
I have not.
Fucking
I know.
Have you seen the film that I'm about to say, the fourth film of Jack Robinson? Silence of the Lambs?
No. It's funny, I'm probably one of the few people in the world who's seen Manhunter and not Silence of the Lambs.
Manhunter is a little bit better.
Sure.
But Silence of the Lambs is like...
Both Hannibal films.
You probably walk away being like, Silence of the Lambs is a perfect film.
Okay.
Jack Robinson's review. Road to Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Oh, I see. So they're rewatching all of the
Pitt films. Hey, we feel ya.
This is a fun road movie thriller. Brad Pitt gives a good performance as a redneck serial killer. And this movie has a lot of thrilling moments as we watch this innocent couple try to survive all the mayhem of his psychotic behavior.
Who are these people?
It can take me. This is...
No, but I mean, like, anyway, this writing it like too. It's a Yelp review of a middling family-style restaurant.
I love it. I feel like I say this every time because I feel like you're mean to these Letterboxd people. I love these Letterboxd people. I'm not being mean to anybody. I love seeing someone express to
me. I know this isn't mean.
No. It contains some enjoyable bloody death scenes. That's a comment on something that you have a lot of issue with. I always get emotional at the end.
How often have you watched it?
It's a rewatch. This is a rewatch, so more than once. This
I mean, if I reckon the tense of "I always get" means at least three times.
Yeah, I fell for Juliette Lewis's character being sucked into all his abuse when she was so naive to it and thinks he's a great boyfriend.
But see, I think one of the interesting things the film does is she's not naive to it. She knows, but she just can't bear to confront it because she doesn't know what that would mean for her. I think you learn that through her... When she turns the music up, right?
I agree with you almost the way. I think it's not that she can't bear to confront it. I think that she... I think the really good scene with the when Carrie is doing her hair and she's...
Yeah.
And Carrie, she's like, isn't this funny? Isn't this good? And Carrie's like, no, that's not good.
Yeah.
That's emotionally affecting. She knows it. She's confronted it, but she thinks like, whatever. And then someone else is like, whoa. It's like a moment of shame for her.
Yeah,
like,
that's true. And then she shuts down the conversation because she realizes... Yeah.
We have to go and see the Michael Bay film Six Underground. It will be your first Michael Bay film.
No, it won't.
Oh.
I've seen Transformers and I saw a Transformers film at the cinema. So I've seen two Michael Bay films.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Which
I saw the one that everyone hated. I think I might have seen Transformers 2 at the cinema. And everyone like really detested it. And I was dragged along to it. I was with friends and I was like, it was fine.
Bay's a madman. And what's the second one? You've seen two.
I think I've seen Transformers 1 and that. I think I might have seen Bad Boys 2 as well. I've got a friend who's obsessed with Bad Boys.
Lucas?
Yeah. No, you've not met them.
Okay, I thought
my friend Matt.
I thought Lucas was like all in on Terrence Malick.
That would
Bad
be
Boys.
No, that is not Lucas. You misunderstand the character of Lucas. Hey, Lucas, how's it going? All right.
What are we doing next week? I don't know.
I have no idea.
Yeah, I have no clue. Might be the Christmas episode.
It might be. We'll see how we go. Yeah, we might be able to... We'll see. We'll let you know what's happening. But we'll be back with more Brad Pitt. We'll be back with a Christmas episode.
Yeah.
We can't wait to talk to you soon.
Yeah, speak to you soon.
Bye.